Well, hello and welcome to Push to Be More. I'm your host, Matt Edmondson, and we are about to dive into another deep exploration of what fuels the journey called life. Yes, we are. And dear listener, forgive my nasal tones. I'm recovering from man flu. Not so serious that I needed to call the paramedics, but close. But we're coming out the other side. Now, joining me today, I have an exciting guest, Stephen White from NED Holdings, and we'll be delving into his unique experiences, the hurdles he's had to push through, the way he recharges his batteries, and what more looks like. Now, don't forget, all of the show notes and transcript of our conversation are going to be on the website, pushtobemore.com. And whilst you're there, if you haven't done so already, sign up for the newsletter, because each week we will zip all of the show's insights, links and goodies directly to your inbox, absolutely for free, which is groovy. Just like this music. Oh yes, love the music playing in the background here. Now, this episode is proudly powered by Orion Media, the magic behind the scenes that lets entrepreneurs and business leaders like you and me amplify our voices by hosting our own unique podcast. Why on earth would you want to start your own podcast? That is a great question. Now, let me tell you, my podcast journey itself has been amazing, fantastic, and brilliant. It's not just about the audience, it's about the people you connect with, the guests, like Stephen, who we've got coming on the show. It's given me a great platform to celebrate my customers, my team, my suppliers, and created a ripple of impact way beyond what I could have imagined, trust me. But I get it, the tech stuff can feel daunting, setup, distribution, and I mean, the whole strategy thing, there's a whole bunch of things that might not make any kind of sense to you. And who on earth wants to get tangled up in production? Well, that's where Orion Media steps in. They are the backstage crew that make sure your show goes on flawlessly. You get to do what you love, which is chatting to amazing people, and Orion Media gets to take care of all the nitty-gritty for you. So if you've been wondering whether podcasting is the missing puzzle in your marketing strategy, it's time to have a chat with Orion Media. Check them out at orionmedia.com. That's AURIONmedia.com. That is the amazing Orion Media. Now, with over 20 years in the game, Stephen is a seasoned investor and turnaround maestro in the B2B software sphere. After a victorious exit from Cadex in 2023, he is now at the helm of NED Holdings, steering underperforming businesses towards profitable shores. Oh yes, always on the prowl for new investment adventures, Stephen is the guiding force behind a burgeoning portfolio of tech success. That's an impressive bio there, Stephen. Welcome to the show. Great to have you, man. How are you doing?
Thank you very much, Matt. It sounds so impressive. I don't believe it. It's never as it's not quite as good as you've made it sound.
We never live up to the hype, do we? In our own bios, it's quite funny. But you know, it's good to have a go. Before we get into the conversation, it's fair to say that you were introduced to the show by David Johnston, who has also been a guest on the show, previous guest. How do you know David?
Oh, David and I have intersected in the GRC space, governance, risk and compliance space here in the UK over the past 2 or 3 years, or probably past 5 or 6 years. And David is a real thought leader in what's happening in GRC, which for most people is quite a boring space because it's in the background. It's businesses, whether it be service businesses or software businesses, that are helping make the world a safer place. And we only realize that the world is a safe place when stuff happens that we wake up and realize it's not a safe place. So keeping airlines in the sky, keeping planes landing without crashing, there's a lot of GRC in the background.
It's one of those things, isn't it, where David was a great guest, by the way, and if you haven't heard the episode, do check it out, dear listener. But it's one of those things, like you say, where I'm very grateful for stuff that I don't know about, you know. All this sort of stuff that happens in the background that we just take for granted now, like a plane, we just assume the plane's going to land when we get on it. And there's a lot of people in the background making sure that that actually happens, if that's you, I'm very, very grateful, no doubt. So, Stephen, David, let's jump into this. First question we like to ask guests, Although technically, I appreciate this is the second question that we're asking you, if we're going to get pedantic, which my son is, if he's listening. We love to ask guests, if you had your own podcast, because, you know, this show is sponsored by Orion Media. We're big fans of podcasting to, you know, use podcasting to grow your own business. If you did have your own podcast and you could interview anybody on your show, past or present, that's had a big influence on your life, who would you interview and why?
Probably a bit cheesy. You've probably heard this before, but I'd interview my dad. My dad passed 6 years ago. I'm now a dad myself, to an 18-year-old, and probably my biggest success, I think, to date has been my son and seeing him grow and evolve. And being a parent is the one thing you don't get a second chance at. Really. There's no training course. There's no manual. Yeah. There's no operator's manual for becoming a dad.
Yeah.
So we all muddle along through it. And the mistakes you make can compound quite quickly, whereas the stuff you do, you don't see the return for many, many, many years. So yeah, I'd go back and interview my dad because we all are turning into our parents one way or the other.
Yeah.
So my wife will frequently remind me of my bad traits that I have picked up from my mum, for example, without the positive traits, etc. But yeah, I think understand my dad more and his decisions and his life journey, because his life journey became the formative years of my personal journey. And I'm a big believer in both nature and nurture. I think as human beings, our nature gives us possibly a leg up in life, but the environment that we are born into and how we're nurtured in that environment also has a massive impact. So I'm certain that my dad has had a huge formative influence on me. So a conversation with him would help me understand myself.
That's really interesting,
better.
Isn't it? You talk about that. And I think, were you close to your dad? Were you and your dad mates? Was that a good relationship?
We were always very, very close. We were always good friends. But when, I suppose, I'm coming towards the end of my parenting journey with my son being 18, and as I frequently remind him, he'll be leaving next year and we'll be pushing him out to fly on his own, and we will not be boomerang parents, fingers crossed. But when I was young, my dad was very busy making ends meet on a very small Irish farm, and it was a very tough environment. He was building a farm from nothing, where farming was not his actual vocation. He was a reluctant farmer. If he had his time over again, he would not have been a farmer. He would have been a medic or a legal professional. Yeah. That was his real calling, but he had to farm because that's the way Irish economy worked back then. So when I was young, he was very busy. So that juggling of work-life balance, we're all dealing with it today.
Yeah.
But my dad was dealing with it as well.
It's not a new thing, is it, the work-life balance? It's something that we've always had to sort of juggle with, I think.
No.
It's interesting, your son is now 18, and you're coming to that sort of phase of life, which we call the empty nester phase, isn't it? So two of my boys, I have three kids, two boys and a daughter. So my two boys have... they're both over 18. They're both at uni. They've both left home. And it's just a really interesting phase of life now, you know, for me and my wife, where a daughter in a few years' time, she'll be moving away from home. And you're starting to think of life, I think, in quite a different way all of a sudden, you know. And have you thought about that, the empty nester thing? How's that sort of impacted you guys?
Yes, gearing up for it. We've been very fortunate in our personal circumstance that the exit from the Quadex business in 8-9 months ago has been a catalyst for a complete new chapter. So we're actually relocating our family next year from the UK to Ireland. So after circa 30 years in the UK, I would be relocating back home, technically, back to where I was born. So we're having to rediscover one another. I know a lot of relationships can struggle in that transition because you've spent the last 18 years or whatever length of time as parents on a joint enterprise, trying to raise kids, trying to make ends meet, trying to get your own personal space and work-life balance, and suddenly you're faced with empty nesting. And it catches up on you a lot quicker than you realize. So far, so good. I'm really looking forward to it.
And it's awesome that you guys are moving back to Ireland. Is that something you've wanted to do for a while?
I relocated to the UK in 1994. It was for 1 year. So I said to my family, I'm going to the UK for a year. A career opportunity was presented to me with the company I was working for to move to the UK to work on an acquisition and an integration of a business within the corporate that I was working for at the time. So I said, I'll give it a year. 29 years ago. So
that's really funny. When I moved to Liverpool, I was like, I'm just going up for university, which in my head was 3 years. And here I am 31 years later, I still live in this city, right? Yeah. Which is, I think in the UK, is probably as close to Ireland as I can get whilst being in the UK.
That's right. That's very much so. I spent a lot of time in Liverpool, beautiful city.
So new chapter awaits. What are you, had this company, Kadex, if I'm pronouncing that right, Stephen. What was that? And why did you feel like it was time to exit?
So Quadex was a business that I founded in 2007 as a software platform to manage risk within the food supply chain. And I had worked in food manufacturing for the previous 9-10 years of my career as a corporate, as an accountant. I was a qualified accountant. But I always, I suppose, from my upbringing, from my farming upbringing, I always had this itch to run my own business or be involved as a shareholder in my own business. So I set up the Quadex business in 2007. I did not have a clue what I was doing. I just thought there would be an opportunity. This was, if you think this was the start of SaaS in 2007, software as a service was only really emerging as an opportunity. So there were so many spheres of business and industry that were manual, that were still manual, that were open to be digitized. So I could see the opportunity to digitize risk management of the food supply chain. So I said, I'll do that. I'll set up a software business, having no idea how software is designed or built or deployed, etc. I just gave it a go. And it's so I started in that journey in 2007. I was very lucky in so much as the business didn't fail. It stumbled from small success to small success and just got slightly bigger each time. We bootstrapped the business. So I never had external shareholders. It was myself. I was a single lone founder, bootstrapped the business. And it just didn't fail. We got product market fit. We got some customers. We kept reinvesting in the platform. And I suppose 15 years later, it was an overnight success.
Yeah, I love that. I've heard that before. It's such a great phrase, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of hard work.
Yeah, no one remembers. No one remembers the 14 years of blood, sweat,
especially for you as the founder. I was talking to my wife about this, that, you know, we often will read autobiographies, you know, and you read people's story. And in those books, they tell you all the good things that happen. Do you know what I mean? This happened and that was amazing and all this sort of stuff. What you don't read in any book and what they never tell you is between that story and that story was 8 months of sheer boredom because they were working so hard to try and get from that part to that part. But it's not, and it's just not an interesting story, is it? So we never hear that. We often hear just sort of the crests of the wave in a lot of ways. And it's funny, 15 years to being an overnight success. And it's so, so true. So the business then you exited, what are you doing now?
So I suppose my current career started in 2019. So the Quadex business had got to a scale where I was really fortunate to have a very good management team who were running that business day to day. And truth be told, they told me I was getting in their way.
I've heard that so many times from my management team. Yeah.
And the individuals, the team were better at everything than I was. So there was not a job in the business in 2019 that couldn't be done better by someone else in the business. So the team started saying, and I started to realize I was getting in their way, getting in the way of their personal development. So one of my team, a lady called Gemma, came up with the concept of Project Make Stephen Redundant. She very passionately took the lead on Project Make Stephen Redundant in 2019. And I leaned into that as well. I leaned into that project. And basically, we identified stuff that I was still doing in the business. And one by one, delegated those tasks, those responsibilities to others, which was amazing to see how quickly other members of the team picked up those responsibilities I had and did it better than I had ever done it. That was incredibly rewarding to realize, actually, I was the limiting factor in the business. So as that project progressed, I started looking at what do I do? Because I suppose I'm a bit like a shark. I'm not a shark, but I have to keep moving. Yeah. If I stop moving, I would die. I have to keep doing stuff. So I said, what are we good at? What do we do? We have a lot of skills within our business. And we were good at software development. And we had 40-odd engineers and testers in our software team. So I said, okay, right. Maybe we could acquire other software businesses and help them become successful. And that started with our first small acquisition in 2019. And we've gone on and subsequently done 7 acquisitions between 2019 and to date. And that has now become Ned Holdings, which is basically a buy and build and invest platform around B2B software businesses.
Is that any B2B software business, or are you sticking to a specific niche like the food industry or...
No, any B2B software, because B2B software is quite a niche in its own right. So we will not look at business to consumer software, because I am the most unfashionable guy in the world. I always miss fashion trends and always wear the wrong clothes and are always unfashionable. So we steer clear of business to consumer. But business to business, I suppose the business sales cycle and how to sell to businesses and how to support businesses and how to make money from selling and supporting to businesses, whether it be software as a recurring revenue or professional services aligned to software, I get and I understand. So that's why we focus. So we have businesses that are communications businesses, that are testing GRC businesses, that are medical technology businesses. So anything B2B we will look at, as long as we can see a thesis for how we can help that business be a better version of itself.
That sounds great. And I just want to go back to Project Make Stephen Redundant, right? Because this is an interesting thing. When I was working, my one and only job where I wasn't my own business, I was working for a guy called Simon. And Simon has been on the show, Simon O'Shaughnessy, one of my very first guests, still a very, very good friend of mine. Love the man to bits. We catch up every month. He now lives in New Zealand and I'm stuck in Liverpool. So, you know, slightly jealous, if I'm honest with you, Stephen. But Simon decided he was going to sell the business. So he wanted to step away from it so the business could function without him. And he went away, I think, for like 4 or 5 weeks. And this was, you know, he told me this. So I took this literally. By the time he came back 5 weeks later, he had no office. I'd taken away his office and all his toys. And in fact, I'd put myself in his office. And I'd given him a little desk space right at the back of the right at the back of the building, away from everything and anyone. So he just couldn't interfere.
Yeah.
And whilst I did what he I took literally what he said. He wasn't actually that happy because it just hit him all of a sudden. Actually, this is what it really means. So I'm kind of curious, when was it Gemma that did the project Make Stephen Redundant? How did you feel about that?
I felt great because as I realized that each responsibility I had was being done better to a higher standard when it was delegated to a member of the team, it was that really made me realize that I was a limiting factor. And I've always had this drive for continual improvement. No matter how good something is, I want it to be better. So it's a perennial, and I suppose I have OCD tendencies as well. But it was this realization that whether it be sales or finance or marketing, other members of the team were better at it than I was. That then it was crazy for me to keep doing stuff. And if anything, if I had delegated stuff earlier, we would have achieved more as a business.
True. And I think for a lot of people, a lot of business leaders, that idea that someone in the business can do it better than you, we can mentally go, that sounds great. But actually emotionally, I think it can make entrepreneurs and leaders feel a little bit insecure. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but we have insecurities. I suppose one of my challenges, I know we might talk about challenges later, is insecurity and imposter syndrome. I struggle big time with imposter syndrome and insecurities. And I don't think that ever goes away. Personally, I'm quite fortunate now. I've got some friends who are very, very, very successful, heading towards billionaire type territory. And when you sit with these individuals and you have open conversations and we have the same insecurities and imposter syndrome and fear, I think the drive that you innately have to build and create businesses doesn't go away when those businesses become successful. That internal fear and insecurity is always
there. Well, you mentioned it, challenges. So you've obviously had, you know, an interesting journey, quite a fun journey by the sound of it. It sounds like you've got a great team behind you. But I'm assuming it's not all plain sailing. You talked about imposter syndrome. Has that been your biggest challenge, or are there other things that you've sort of had to deal with that were bigger?
I think for me, insecurity and imposter syndrome are the two biggest challenges, because they're the challenges I have not been able to overcome. So the building a business, and anyone who's on here who has built and exited a business or is currently on their journey of building their business will know that you're being hit with challenges every day, every week, every month. And just the magnitude of those challenges change, but you're constantly being hit with challenges. And the successful business leader overcomes those challenges. And there's too many. The mistakes, the other challenge is learning from mistakes and not getting hung up on your mistakes. Because the mistakes I've made so many mistakes, and some of them very, very, very big mistakes. But I'm able to move on from that. But the challenges I've not personally been able to overcome is imposter syndrome and insecurity. I know I am successful as a business person. I've achieved quite a bit with my business career. Technically, if I wanted to, I never need to work another day in my life. But I'm still full of insecurities.
And where do you think they came from, Stephen?
I don't know. Coming back on your point earlier, maybe the conversation with my dad would have helped uncover the insecurities. But I suspect from speaking to other entrepreneurs that I know and I'm friendly with, they have their insecurities as well. I suspect there is a thesis somewhere in some university that needs to go away and research the insecurities of successful business people. And I suspect a lot of them have insecurities, because that's what, I suppose, that could be the well that this drive comes from. Because why would someone give up a very well-paying corporate career, which I did? I was a board-level person in a large food group in my 20s.
Yeah,
I was sorted from a career point of view. Well, why did I give up all of that and take the risk on an entrepreneurial journey? I don't know. I really don't know. And it's beyond me because I'm not an academic, but I suspect a lot of successful people have these insecurities underneath. They may not say it. I think one of the things I think the pandemic has been really beneficial in is it's helped us to be more open.
Yeah.
I think blokes in particular don't share their internal fears and insecurities. They put up a front. Yeah. Everything's good here, nothing to see.
Yeah, it's interesting that, I mean, it's a shocking statistic, but I think it's young men in their early 20s who are more prone to suicide than any other group of people. And a lot of it comes down to men not having the ability to talk and deal with, you know, what is going on emotionally and internally. Mm. And it's sad and it's shocking and it's true. And I think one of the things success does, and maybe part of the reason why entrepreneurs like success, is entrepreneurs, when they're successful, it masks their insecurities. Because you can point to that and go, this has worked well. I'm actually, maybe people will think I'm okay because I've proven that I can be successful here. And the other thing that I've noticed with entrepreneurs, and again, not true for everybody, I'm definitely not a psychologist, but one of the things that I've noticed is that we work very hard and to be successful because maybe that's the only thing in life that is giving us validation for ourselves. Right. So especially, you know, it's sad, but a lot of people might have an unhappy relationship, you know, and they're not getting that sense of contentment and validation, I suppose, from that relationship. So they turn to the business and pour all their effort in the business because that's something that they can control in a lot of ways. And when it's successful, it validates us. But at the heart of that lies this insecurity aspect that you talk about, Stephen, doesn't it?
Correct. I personally, I also think if the entrepreneur can balance their family life and bring the resilience and the effort that they make with their business and bring some of that home with them at the weekend and to their family and invest energy in their family the same way they've invested energy in the business, they can actually address some of the challenges in their personal life. Because I have yet to meet someone amongst my friendship group who will say that their relationship with their life partner has been completely perfect from day one. I think business is a series of peaks and troughs. I think relationships, whether it be with your partner or your children, is a series of peaks and troughs. And if you can invest your time in trying to make your personal life successful in the same way as you do with your business, you can probably juggle both. I personally feel blessed. I've only got one kid. My son, who I mentioned earlier, I am in complete awe of families who have 3-4 children. I couldn't have coped with 3 or 4 children. I was just about able to invest the time in one child to ensure I was present when I needed to be present to ensure we've got to a point where he is probably my best friend and probably, if you'd ask me for a second person who I would like to interview on my podcast after my dad, it would probably be my son, because I'm very proud of the young man has become.
And you said at the start, actually, the biggest success has been your son. And it sounds, listening to you, Stephen, that that's been very intentional. It wasn't by accident.
No, I wouldn't say so. No, this might get me into a lot of trouble, but I was an awful parent for the first 18 months. In the first 18 months, I pretty much steered as clear as I could from being a hands-on parent, changing nappies and getting up in the middle of the night. I very much delegated that responsibility. And I suppose I I like to delegate, but that's something that most dads now don't delegate to lean in. I didn't lean in on. I would say it was only when my son probably turned 4 or 5 and he started getting interested in sports and doing physical stuff that I started to lean in and build a relationship with him. And because there was only one kid, because my siblings all have larger families, so they're juggling work, life, and a bigger family. And that's a huge, you're spreading yourself very thinly. Because I only had one son, I was able to get to pretty much all sports days, get to key milestone events in his life that I probably wouldn't have been able to do if I'd had 4 children.
It's so interesting, isn't it? I mean, I've got 3, and I would, like you, I would say that I have a great relationship with all of my kids. They're all amazing. And I'm super proud of every single one of them. I think they've become very good human beings, and I think they'll contribute a lot to the world. And, you know, as a dad, you kind of, when they sort of fly the nest and they sort of turn from a kid to being a man or from a girl to being a woman, you are both proud of them, and you kind of look at it and go, I'm super thankful I was part of that journey. You're just nothing but grateful in a lot of ways, aren't you? And you get to play a role in that, which was lovely. And you get them to see them, you know, sort of play their part. But I think from my point of view, raising 3 kids, and I've been married 25 years. I am still in love with my wife as I was on day one. She's, if not more, she's an absolute legend. That, like you say, that just doesn't happen. You have to invest in that family aspect of it. And I'm super glad that I did. And it's interesting you talk about the peaks and troughs in relationships, you know, with your kids, with your wife, in business. I find now that it's very easy to bail when things start to get difficult, when you start to get into the trough. So, I have theories as to why this is, Stephen, but it's interesting, isn't it, that if things become difficult, if things become complex, it's a lot easier to bail now and go, right, well, I'm out, you know. Were you ever tempted in business, in life, when things were difficult, just to go, I'm out, I need to escape this? Or was it always a case of, no, I'm in this, I've got to make this work?
No, the temptations to give up on the business were there multiple times. And in our relationship over the years, there were very low moments as well. And we had open conversations about it. But I suppose, again, I was quite lucky in that I realized that I'm a difficult person to live with. So therefore, I recognize I was very lucky that I had a wife who was prepared to live with me and come with me on the journey. So, no, I suppose you get to a point, and I got to be careful, you don't get complacent, but you get to a point where you're actually very comfortable. So I really couldn't be bothered now, because I like you, Matt, I actually love my wife. I can see myself, we'd be knowing another 29 years this year. I'm going to get myself into trouble now. I'm not exactly sure. How many years we're married? I wasn't prepped for. We're 20 plus years married. I know we celebrated 20 years in the past 2 or 3 years. We're 20 plus years married. I think it's 21st of April is our anniversary. I'm shit with stuff like that. But I suppose what I'm very comfortable saying is I'm looking forward to the next 20 years. With
good recovery.
Wife. And I think that'll probably see me out, because if she puts up with me for another 20 years, that's going to take me into my early 70s. If I survive till then, it'll be a good innings.
I totally agree. Totally agree. Well, congratulations. I mean, it's lovely to hear, you know, and super, super awesome. So all this stuff is going on. Obviously, you're working hard in business, Stephen. One of the things we love to ask guests is how do you recharge your batteries personally? How do you do that? Because it sounds like there's a lot going on. Do you do anything intentional, or is it just happenstance?
Yeah, walking. Okay. I do a lot of walking with the dog, and some of my best thinking is when I'm out walking. Put headphones on, listen to some good music, listen to some podcasts or audible books, etc. So walking is fantastic from a recharging point of view. But as I mentioned earlier, yeah. I'm a bit of a shark. I have to keep moving the whole time. I can say this now, having exited Quad Exit earlier this year, I've actually gone back to my childhood okay. love of driving tractors. So some people sell their businesses and buy a Ferrari or buy a villa in the Med somewhere. I bought a tractor and I go tractoring. So, because one of the challenges with what we do now, which is buying businesses and turning them around, is you can go months and months and months and months with nothing happening. So tractoring allows me to just be doing stuff, yet be patient and wait for the right deal to come along. Because it's very easy to swing at every deal that comes at you. The real skill is only to swing at the ones where you know you can make a difference and you can drive real value.
I love
value.
That tractoring. I used to, when I was younger, Stephen, when I was about 18, I volunteered to work at a children's home. In the States, North Carolina. Yeah. And I did this as a gap year between, a sixth form and university. And part of my job at the children's home was to spend 2 days a week riding a John Deere tractor, mowing hundreds of acres of grass for this child. Yeah. Cause, land was abundant, let me tell you. And I would spend hours on this John, became very acquainted with a John Deere tractor. And this was back in the days when... we didn't have MP3 players. We had cassettes in Walkman. Do you remember them, right? And you were lucky to get 90 minutes on a tape, and you could flip it over. And in fact, my Walkman was so advanced, you didn't have to take it out to flip it over. You push the button, and it was amazing.
Auto reverse. I remember.
Life-changing technology. And so I'm sitting here listening to you talk about riding a tractor. And I'm thinking, you know what? That's taken me back, because they were some of the best days. You knew you would spend 2 days just listening to music, thinking, just riding up and down in the North Carolina sunshine, just up and down those fields without any agenda. And it was stunningly amazing. And so I just need to find someone with a field that I can ride a tractor up and down, right?
Or find someone, Matt, reach out. I'll get you tractoring opportunities. Fantastic. In Ireland anytime you want. Every summer, the farming contractors over there are crying out for able-bodied people.
Seeing a new business
tractors.
Opportunity here, Stephen. It's just like, I'm going to take burnout executives and I'm going to send them to your farm for 3 weeks just to drive a tractor. It'd be amazing.
Yeah. It'll be a chargeable experience. Actually, Matt, we've got a business opportunity there. If we use your podcast, we can set up a business whereby we do tractoring experiences.
I'm loving that. I'm going to check the domain name, tractoring experience. Tractoryourwaytobetterleadership.com. You know, that kind of I'm loving that. That's fantastic. I definitely get the tractoring. But you like walking. Is there a specific place you like to walk? Do you like to get up out in the hills?
Yeah, we're very lucky here where we live in rural Leicestershire. Yeah. We're in a small village in England, and we're near the River Soar, and we have a place called Cossington Meadows, which is a nature reserve of probably a couple of hundred acres. So I generally can walk 6, 7, 8 kilometers most mornings with the dog, weather permitting.
Fantastic.
In the open countryside. So it's lovely. It's it really does recharge the batteries. Particularly in the summer when I go out early at 5 o'clock in the morning.
That's one of the things I miss living in Liverpool. I mean, Liverpool's a great place, but it is a city. And so the countryside is a drive. You can't you've got to be intentional.
Yeah.
What does growth look like? What does more look like for you? Where's the future heading?
Growth is continuing to be free, which I am, and pursue whatever projects I want to pursue. But as I suppose growth, I suppose commercially, is finding more software businesses that we can help turn around. We can help bring them to a better place. There are some, we all know the very successful software businesses, but there's a lot of software businesses and software founders who are just about surviving. They're not enjoying their business, they're not making good money running their businesses, etc. We're able to work with those teams and transition those businesses to be successful, growing, profitable businesses. So it's finding more of those opportunities and then developing the team, because I'm very fortunate again to have a really good leadership team around. We have got a fantastic chief operating officer, chief technical officer, chief financial officer, helping them develop and grow and helping their teams develop and grow. I suppose one of my, MOs is do as little as possible. Delegate. I do as little as possible so I can be off walking the dog or thinking about stuff or tractoring, etc., and let the team deliver stuff, because again, they're better at it than me because I flit all over the place. So yeah, growth is find more businesses, more opportunities where we can turn businesses around, but we're not in any rush. We'll wait till the right opportunity presents itself.
What sort of businesses do you work well with? I mean, if anyone's listening, what's the sort of criteria, I suppose, that you're thinking about when you're looking for companies?
So generally now we're looking at businesses that have a minimum of £1 million recurring revenue. Smaller than that, and they're just too small, they will have a team of people already in the business running the business or actively involved day to day. So we can basically enable that team to deliver what they want to deliver in that business, give them the tools, give them the resources. So typically when we acquire a business or invest in a business, we meet with each of the individuals, every person in the business currently, and ask them two key questions. What's the business doing really well that we need to preserve? And what could the business do better? And those two questions gives us the roadmap for what we need to do with that business going forward. Because what we have found in our past three or four acquisitions is the existing team in the business knows what needs to be fixed in that business, what that business needs to do to get to a better place. So all we do is identify that, agree those with the team, and then give them the tools, give them the resources, and give them the time to do that, and then get out of their way and be patient. So it will generally take at least 1 year for a business to be stabilized, then another year or two for it to start on a growth path, and then 5 to 10 years down the road, you will have created a fantastic business, but you have to be patient. Whereas private equity and venture capitalists are working on much shorter time frames. We work on longer time
frame. Very good. Stephen, listen, I'm aware of time, so we're going to do the question box. Dun, 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 dun. I need to get music. I still need to get music. The question box. Oh, yes. Here we go. So I'm going to take these stack of questions. I'm going to flick through them. Wherever you tell me to stop, that's where we're going to stop. And that's the question I'm going to ask you. I'm just going to tell
you. What if I don't tell you to stop?
Which is ironically the last question.
Stop.
Okay. Well, you've kind of answered this one a little bit. If you had to choose between a happy home life and a mediocre career, or a successful career and a mediocre home life, which would you choose? Every day.
Happy home life.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. It's an easy question. Well, turns out the last one was a good one. I'm just going to write your name on it so I know that you've answered that question. Because if it comes up again, it'll be interesting to hear. And I wonder if people would say happy home because they feel that's the answer they should give. It's an interesting one, isn't it?
There is an element to that. But also it's very easy when you're sitting in the seat I'm sitting with. I'm very comfortable with what I've achieved in my career. It's very easy now to just say a happy home life. But if you're at the start of your career and you're struggling to make ends meet, that's a much, much, much more nuanced
question. It really is. It's a fascinating one, isn't it? Stephen, listen, I have thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. Love the conversation about tractors. Love the conversation about family. And just really enjoyed your enthusiasm and your humour and your joy for life. It's been an absolute treat having you on. If people want to reach out to you, if they want to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
I avoid all social media.
It's probably why you're quite happy
LinkedIn.
In life. It's another successful thing. Just avoid social media.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am on LinkedIn at the moment. Who knows? I might come off LinkedIn at some point. But for the foreseeable future, I'm on LinkedIn.
Fantastic.
You'll find me there.
NED Holdings on LinkedIn. We will, of course, link to Stephen's info in the show notes, which you can get along for free with a transcript on the website, pushtobemore.com. And, of course, if you sign up to the newsletter, it'll be coming straight to your inbox. So just click the link, connect with Stephen, and say, how's it? Why would you not want to? Stephen, thanks, man. Really, really appreciate it. Genuinely love that conversation and super inspiring. And wish you all the best with the next few years, sir. Well, that's
You're
a
welcome.
Wrap
Thank
on
you.
Another invigorating conversation. A huge round of applause to Stephen. I need to do this. Don't I? Hang on a second. Let me get my desk up. A huge round of applause. Oh, yes, for Stephen for joining us today. Okay, that's enough applause. and shedding light on his inspiring journey. And it was super inspiring, wasn't it? And I hope you got a lot out of that. Now, huge thanks again to today's show sponsor, Orient Media. For all you change makers out there contemplating podcasting, should I say, as a new vehicle of expression and connection, definitely connect with them at orientmedia.com. And don't forget, keep pushing to be more. Don't forget to follow the show wherever you get your podcast from, because we've got some more seriously compelling conversations up our sleeve. And in case no one's told you yet today, let me be the first. You are awesome. Yes, you are. Created awesome. It's just a burden you have to bear. Stephen has to bear it. I've got to bear it. You definitely have to bear it as well. Now, Push to Be More is brought to you live by Orion Media. For transcripts and show notes, as I said, swing on by the website, pushtobemore.com. Big kudos to the team that makes this show possible, Sadaf Bainon and Tanya Hutzlack. Also, shout out to Josh Edmondson for the amazing and wonderful theme music. So, from Stephen and from me, thank you so much for joining us. Have a fantastic week wherever you are. I'll catch you on the flip side. Until then, keep pushing. And bye for now.